Okay. I think what we left today was the Avinu Malkeinu issue. So let's talk about this outside. Just follow along. Let me talk a little bit outside. My head is like... Yes. My head is spinning, so I'm going to try to say it as much as I can coherently outside. No, this is all...
Oh.
Yeah, anyways. So Avinu Malkeinu is strongly represented both in Tshuva and Slicha. Right, the bracha of Tshuva and the bracha of Slicha. So a little bit of background. We've definitely talked about this at some point. One of the things you've got to understand in Tanakh, Chazal in general, is that Tanakh describes the relationship of God and the Jewish people with many, many different metaphors. Presumably the reason for that is that each metaphor describes a certain element, but the complexity of our relationship with God is reflected in combinations of that. So, for example, here we only have Avinu Malkeinu, but let's take some others. What is the clear advantage of the central metaphor of Shir HaShirim, the spousal one?
That you love God.
So first of all, yeah, it's one based on love, but more than that, so is a parental relationship based on love. What's the benefit of the spousal description of God?
It's like romantic.
The partnership is that it presents us as an equal, which is a very strange thing. The other ones don't, right? Melech does it, right? Melech to Eved doesn't, parent to child doesn't. The only relationship we have where we're presented as God's equal, where we entered into it willingly, is the spousal relationship. That's the benefit of the spousal relationship. It emphasizes our input, our responsibility, and the like. What's the downside of a spousal relationship?
It looks like, right?
For sure. But what else? What else is the detriment? If you really think the relationship we have with God is spousal, so then what does that mean? What's true of a spousal relationship? You can get divorced. It's not inalienable. Right? And that's why we talked about this in terms of Yeshayahu Perek Nun. That's why God has to say, yes, we're married, but don't think that Gullet was divorced. I didn't give you a bill of divorce. Because it's tempered with other relationships, which are inalienable, like parental, sibling. Even within Shir HaShirim, they...
Wait.
Yes. Achoti Kala. Shir HaShirim.
Uh-huh.
My sister, my Kala.
Ah, that's weird.
Right, because siblings are inalienable.
Uh-huh.
Right, they're equal, but they're inalienable.
Right.
So we have sibling plus spousal. Because we're equal, it's willing, but it's not actually alienable because it's tempered by that. And we have other ones. We have ones, animal... Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what's the benefit of that relationship? What's the benefit of calling God our shepherd?
He's guiding us.
What else?
Our leader.
And we have no responsibility. Meaning, the benefit of it is there's no expectation of us. God will lead us and take care of us no matter what happens because we're just his sheep. The downside, obviously, is it's a relationship that doesn't describe our free will, our input. Right? It has a comforting factor in the sense that God takes care of us no matter what, but it dehumanizes us, literally.
Yeah.
We are not described as human. So each of these relationships has an element that is comforting and has a downside, and therefore we describe the complexity with all of them together. The piyut that really captures is the best, is obviously... Well, that's one of them. I gave that to you. But the most comprehensive, which I didn't put here, is also from Yom Kippur Davening. Right, where we go through everything. You are our pruner, and we are your vineyard. Right, you have to figure out everyone. Right, we completely objectify there.
Yeah.
But so each relationship carries with it different elements of the totality, and the nature of Tanakh is that we believe that all of those are in some level true, and none of them are completely accurate. It's a mashal, and each of them have a little bit of element. So what is Avinu Malkeinu specifically? So Avinu Malkeinu, which are the only two which are invoked in these brachot, where did we get them from? Right? What is the unit? Where do we get this notion that that's the two that we should invoke?
From the Gemara.
Yes, from who in the Gemara?
Rabbi Kiva.
But that's number 13. The Rabbi Yared Rabbi Akiva Achrav Amar Avinu Malkenu Ein Lanu Melech Elata. Our father, our king. Avinu Malkenu Limancha Rachem Aleinu.
It's interesting to say Avinu Malkenu Ein Lanu Melech Elata.
Yes.
Right, that's an actual
thing. Yes.
It leaves out the Avinu thing.
What?
It leaves out the Avinu.
The whole thing is very strange.
Yeah.
But let's try to think about it. So what is Avinu Malkenu? So let's talk about it. What's the benefit of the Avinu relationship?
Avinu, I just...
Loving.
Loving, great. And inalienable. Okay.
Avinu's really far.
Good. Avinu emphasizes closeness, intimacy, inalienability.
Transcendentalness.
That God takes care of us, right? All those images are invoked with Av. What does Melech invoke?
Distance.
So good. It's a fair description of God. Yeah. In that sense, that it focuses on God's transcendence, greatness, grandeur, which is lost. It emphasizes, in terms of our relationship, service.
Yeah.
Now, that's if you take Avinu Malkenu separately. But what is the uniqueness of Avinu Malkenu as a unit?
That right. Like
you have both.
Very good. Right. In Chazal, I think the emphasis on us being princes is this notion that while many of these relationships don't, these metaphors work separately, Avinu Malkenu is meant to work together. That our relationship with God is one where we're a prince, and therefore our relationship to God is both one of father and one
subjects.
Well, they're not. I mean, in the image, they're not. Yeah, exactly. What?
If you carry the metaphor through.
Correct. They're not. They're not the children of. Exactly.
So then if you're a convert, you just like become a prince.
Yes. Yes. So I think that if you want to understand the way it comes up in Tshuva, you need to realize both in general the complexity of relationships and the fact that here, by invoking Avinu, Malkenu, and Tshuva, you do two things. One is you emphasize the uniqueness of both the Avinu and the Malkenu relationship, but the second is that you emphasize what it means to understand the metaphors as joint metaphors, which is specifically that we're a prince. Now, you're right. In Rosh Hashanah Davening, we invoke Avinu Malkenu, but specifically to avoid Malkenu. And that's what you get in 14. Hayom harat olam, hayom yamid b'mishpat, kol yitzirei olamim, im kivanim, im ka'avadim, im kivanim rachamino k'rachem olavanim. If we're children, so forgive us. And if you're viewing us right now like servants, then we're at your mercy.
Right.
And that's the image. Now, it's clear that the extent to which we invoke the Avinu element here is we're looking for mercy, and that's why we're invoking it in Tshuva. But I would say, why do we invoke Malkenu at the same time?
Because we recognize that it's not all...
Yeah, I think is that you need both, because on the one hand, we hope we get the mercy of Av, but realistically, we know we may not deserve it, so you have to acknowledge that, right? You can't just say, oh, Father, if you know that may not be how you're treated.
Right.
So in Tfilah Brachot, we invoke both of these. So... I gave you a collection. A lot of these are collected at mayim.org.il, the link I gave you at the top here. There are several of the Gemara that bring this sort of complexity to the fore. Now, I will point out that it's really not true that Ben is so obviously merciful either. So if you look at 17 for a moment, the Gemara says as follows, you are God's children. Right? The first day in the Gemara is that you're only called a child if you act like children. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not true. You think that Ben is inalienable? It's not true. You only deserve to be a Ben if you act like a son. Rabbi Meir says, no. The whole vort of being a Ben is that you're a son no matter what you do. That's what that metaphor is getting across. Because in Tanakh, sometimes we're called foolish children, meaning we're children who are doing what you shouldn't be doing, but you're still children. And God says you have children with no faith. Right? No, not faith. Imun is that I can't trust.
Right.
Now, if I asked you, what's the machlokes? What's the machlokes? Whether I understand Rabbi Meir,
yeah,
which is that Ben is emphasizing the nature of the relationship with God that is inalienable and therefore doesn't depend on our actions. What's Pshat and Rabbi Yehuda thinks even Ben is not like that?
Oh, because Ben just refers to the rachman, the good that we get from God. So that only comes.
So it could be. I would say slightly differently. Look at 18. Look at the Rambam in the Meir Nevuchim. I mean, the Rambam in his language, the Meir Nevuchim, says it's well known that the verb yolad means to bear, or they have borne him children. The word was next used in a figurative sense with a reference of various objects in nature, meaning to create before the mountains were created, to produce, etc. The verb denotes to bring forth, etc. Top of the next page. A man who's instructed another in any subject, top of the next page, and has improved his knowledge may in like manner be regarded as the parent of the person taught, because he's the author of that knowledge. And thus the pupils of the prophets are called sons of the prophets, etc. The Rambam says, the first whole section of the Mordechai is just language. And he says, Ben, there's the literal meaning of Ben, which is child. Then there's metaphorical levels, which is that which is produced, and that which is a student can also be a child, because he's the spiritual heir rather than the physical heir. What does that tell you? That the word Ben, there's the literal meaning, which emphasizes child.
Yeah.
And then there are figurative meanings, like Talmidim Harehim Kivanim, which are
only if you follow in their...
Correct. Then if they're spiritual heirs. I think the Machlokes of Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is, when we call children Ben, are we talking about...
Is the metaphor
based on the literal meaning? Meaning, we're like children? Mm-hmm. Or is it using one level out figurative? That just like we know, sometimes Ben refers to the spiritual heirs, right? The students of... Now, students are only legitimate students if they follow the path. So therefore, Yehuda says, no. Ben here is being used, even in the metaphor, in the figurative sense.
Right.
Meaning, student, spiritual heir of, in which case, you only deserve to be a Ben even, if you follow the path.
Right.
Rabbi Meir is saying, no. The metaphor is following, it's a metaphor of the literal. And the message is therefore not that you are a child if you follow the path, because it's not student-like children, it's child-like child, which is inalienable. The majority of you, I think, in liturgy has followed the Rabbi Meir-esque view.
Yes.
That the metaphor of Ben, used in tshuva especially, and slicha, is the inalienable child,
yeah,
one. But it's not exclusive. Because there is another way of doing this, which is the way you get it in Bava Basra. Bava Basra tells the following. Rabbi Meir said, "Yesh lebal din lo shchivu l'amrim aleichem oev aniyim u'mibnei mayin u'mefarnesan amar lo kidei shenitzol anu bohen midino shel geino." This is number 15. Rabbi Meir said, you could have a philosophical argument and say, why are there poor people? And why should you give them staka? If God wanted them to have money, he would have given it to them. Why are you giving them? And he says,
being born with no...
Well, 1 second. So he says, because God wanted us to get Holam Haba from and be saved from Genom. God wanted us to be saved by giving staka. Then the Gemara tells the following story of Tarnus Rofus and Rabbi Kiva. Tarnus Rofus says to Rabbi Kiva, Im Elokeichem, Oevanim, Mibnei Ma'ein, Nefarnesam. If God loves poor people so much, why doesn't he give them money himself? So Amar lo, kadesh nitzolein, anu minin shel Gehenim, so we'll be saved from Gehenim. And he, what did Tarnas, I'll say it outside. Tarnas Rafa says to him, what do you mean? You're going to go to Gehenim because God wanted them poor and you're uprooting it. So what does Rabbi Kiva say to him? What did Rabbi Kiva say?
Says... a mashal,
right? I'll give you a mashal. The melech bazav damshe calls al binel v'chavshu beiz yishurim. It's like a king who gets angry at his son, throws him in prison. V'tziva shelo la'achilo v'shelo la'ashkozo, and said, "Don't let him eat." And v'halach adam echad ve'achilu v'yishkeyu, and then someone went and gave him food anyways. So what do you think? Will the king be angry?
Right.
He said, no, he won't be angry. Kishe shama hamelech lo doron mishager lo, won't the king be happy and send him a gift? Why? Because he's torn. He's a prince, which means as a king, he doesn't want you to break his rules.
Right.
But as a father, he wants you to break his rules. So yeah, the king side of God may have decreed that this person should be poor, but the father side is happy that people are supporting him. What does Turner's Rafa say to him? Amar lo, atem kriyim banim u kriyim avadim. No. You are both servants and children. Bizman atem ritzon osim ritzon osham akom atem kriyim banim. You're only children if you follow God. Meaning, Ben in the?
Figurative sense.
In the figurative sense, essentially. If you don't deserve it, you flip over to Eved, Mimela, God doesn't want to have mercy on you. And he would be upset at anyone who has mercy on you. So what does he answer? And then he proves, no, you're supposed to give tzedakah. But what? So Rabbi Kiva doesn't tell you how he responds to the relationship argument. But presumably, what's his argument? The fact that we continue to give them tzedakah must indicate that presumably he doesn't agree. Yeah. That this is the machlokas. Right? Meaning Tarnas Rafus is saying, no, you only deserve to be sons when you're following Dvar Hashem, and therefore you don't have the right to get kapara when you don't deserve it. Rabbi Kiva says, no, you have sukkim that say you should always be giving people tzedakah, which indicates that we're treated like children, like rebellious princes.
Or you say that's actually God's will to do that.
Yes, but what's his theological argument? Because God has this complexity. As a melech, he doesn't. And as a father, he does. That's the complexity of our relationship. So just based on that, if we stop there, right? And this is because we started late because we were doing all those things. So, okay, it'll spill over into one more week, which I wasn't really planning on doing, but okay. Whatever. Hopefully by next week we'll all be feeling better. Right? What? Oh, exactly. Yeah, I think we're going to skip Geula because we did a lot of it when we did Order. And we did a lot of the fundamental stuff. Sure. We might maybe spend a week maybe back on Kedusha, which we haven't done. Okay. So maybe I don't know. But I think that the reason you invoke it in the context of Tefillah is because on the one hand, there's a complexity. And if God relates to us, you don't want to just say Avinu. You want to say Avinu because you want mercy. But on the other hand, if you only said Avinu, what do you lose?
The
mechuyavut, the responsibility. The combination is, on the one hand, we can ask for forgiveness because you're our father. On the other hand, we understand that at a certain level, we only deserve to be in relationship with you if we follow it because we have a melech eved, and even within Ben, there's tzvei dinim in Ben, because there's the inalienable Ben, and then there's the spiritual heir Ben, which is dependent on those following. In tshuva, you really want both. Because on the one hand, you want to emphasize mercy because we want forgiveness. But on the other hand, you don't want to emphasize only...
Right, because you want to actually...
Because you want to motivate yourself to do tshuva, and therefore it's important that the dafka, the imagery that we pick in tshuva and slicha, is always Avinu Malkeinu, which captures those two complex relationships. You can't just have an av relationship. You need an av relationship for forgiveness. You need a melech relationship to remind us of our responsibility and the gravity of what we've done.
Right.
If you don't have the duality, you don't capture the complexity of the nature of sin. It's already 1:00. Yeah, we don't really have a choice. Okay, it's going to have to be one more week. I really didn't want to do that, but it'll be
okay.
One more week. Fine.